The following podcast is not real, but it is really sponsored by Cards Against Humanity. They asked us not to read an ad. Enjoy the show.
Hello from the Magic Tavern, a weekly podcast from the magical land of Foon. I'm your host, Arnie Niekamp. If this is your first time listening to the podcast, a little over half a year ago, I fell through a magical dimensional portal behind a Burger King into the magical land of Foon, and luckily I still get a slight Wi-Fi signal through the portal from the Burger King, and I use that to upload a podcast that I record here in the tavern, the Vermilion Minotaur, in the town of Hogsface, in the land of Foon. Joining me, as always, are my co-hosts, Chunt the Talking Badger.
Bing bong.
Is that a new catchphrase, Chunt?
Oh, I'm just saying stuff.
Just
not everything I say has to be a catchphrase.
That's true. So you're saying you will never again say bing bong?
No, Chunt's up with that. All right. Bing bong. Oh, yeah, baby.
And I'm also joined by...
I am Usador, wizard of the 12th realm of Ephesius, master of light and shadow, manipulator of magical delights, devourer of chaos, champion of the great halls of Tarakas. The elves know me as
Feline Zelic.
The dwarves know me as Zonin and Hookstanges. And I am new to the northeast as Gasmanius Maystar, and there may be other secret names you do not know yet, names so filled with magical portent that they would fry your eyeballs from the inside out.
Holy cow.
Yes?
Fry my eyeballs?
Oh, yes. They would catch a flame within the center and burn out from the inside towards the outside.
From the inside towards the outside?
From the inside toward the outside. And then, as flame shot forward from the eye sockets where your eyeballs used to be, you would scream, "Why did you say that powerful name? Why did you put this burden upon me, Usador, wizard of the 12th realm of Ephesius? Why have you damned me to this sightless state?"
Bing bong.
Oh, my eyes. Bing bong.
You know, I'm kind of liking the bing bong.
Wowie owie, bing bong.
You know, before we go any further, I know I normally don't do this. Usually we do the emails at the end of the episode. Mm-hmm. But I kind of want to read one of the emails that we've gotten from one of our listeners recently. If you want to send us emails, you can send them to magictavern@puppies.supplies.
Wow, what an exciting turn of events. You're really flipping the show on its head, huh?
I know. Completely in the opposite. Wow. Maybe we'll just do our regular banter then at the end of the show instead of at the beginning. Arnie, you said some time ago that you would do an Earth episode, and I eagerly await this. The reactions of your friends over the bits and pieces you've shared have been priceless. I think they deserve to know more about where you come from. Perhaps it would help clear up some of the cultural misconceptions you've run into. Thanks, and have DQ back again as a guest soon. Icy Toes from Alaska, the frozen land of the north. P.S. I'm sure that Sarah has not moved on and that she shows your photo to your daughter and tells her stories of you every night. Us Earthwives are pretty great that way. Oh, thank you so much, Icy Toes. P.P.S. Chunt, I think two buttholes is plenty, and more than that, you're just being greedy.
Mind your biz, bing bong.
It's so sad when you meet someone living in a delusional state.
Yeah.
Well, Icy Toes, thank you so much, and thank you for that bit of kindness about my wife and daughter. That means a lot.
That's
and because
unlikely,
of that, you're in luck, Icy Toes. You said you love Earth stuff and you love DQ, so we are going to do an Earth stuff episode.
Woo!
And our special guest is not DQ. It's wonderful. Benedict Whisperbrew.
Hello, it's so wonderful to be back.
Hello, Benedict. How have you been?
Well, thank you, Gasmonius. If I want to be honest, I have not been doing very well.
Oh, no, Benedict.
I think if you remember, last time I was here, I was trying to get Arnie to be Titania's consort for the dance of the satiated hippogriff.
And just for new listeners, you work for the king in the north and the queen in the north.
Well, let's examine the verb tense we're choosing. I used to be the court eunuch for Queen Titania, and when I returned to court empty-handed, without that grade-A specimen of man-meat that is Arnie, she flew into such an orgiastic rage that I was swiftly demoted to adjunct eunuch, which means I go back to eunuch classes. I have to take eunuchs level 1 through 3, and then I have a chance to audition to be court eunuch at the end of next term.
Oh my God!
Now, if we may take a moment to break down this story, I have one question.
Absolute, and I have multiple answers.
Oh God!
You said that your news caused her to have an orgiastic rage.
Yes.
How was that?
It was frightening and all-consuming to watch. Every fiber of her finely crafted being flew into such a pleasure-filled rage that she crumpled every living organism into a desiccant heap at its conclusion after 7 hours.
Wow. 7 hours?
Yes, she is Titania. That's what you passed up, Arnold.
That's too much. It would have killed me.
Well, I hope your relationship with Saramaher was worth it.
With who?
Saramaher, your wife.
Oh, Saramaher, my wife?
Saramaher, yes. What am I saying?
You're saying Saramaher. It's more separated.
I think we're saying the same thing.
It's Sarah Maher.
No, I think we're saying... that's what I'm saying. Saramaher.
I believe it might be actually pronounced Sarah Rockham.
No, I think much like Arnie and Sarah themselves, you have to separate Sarah and Maher.
Aww.
And never have them come back together.
No. Well,
I think that's the way you say it.
Yeah. But anyway, pronunciation aside, I am currently on a leave of absence. I've lost all courtly benefits, and I'm just, you know, taking some time to tour the countryside and reevaluate what it is I want to do with my life.
Did you reattach your
Yes.
Bong?
Oh, thank you so much for asking, Chunt. Yes. As you know, I do keep my genitalia in a mason jar filled with elven tears, and I haven't reattached it yet, but I'm considering it. You know, I mean, I'm leaving my options open.
Yeah, you do you. You do you.
I'm really stuck on... So are you leaning towards un-eunuching yourself?
You know what? No one has really asked me that, and I haven't had to ask myself that yet, Arnie, if that makes any sense.
Oh, sure.
So I have a lot... Before I was a eunuch, my passion was the short story. And I would often write, Gasmoenius, you might remember, I was well known for writing the shortest stories in all of Foon. Sometimes they'd be a letter. Sometimes they'd be
a
sound. You know, and I was nominated for a lot of National Foonian Literary Awards.
That's very true. Yes.
What was the sound one that you got nominated for?
That went like this. Boop. And it's about an elven widow who comes to terms with the fact that her husband's not coming back from the elvish armies of the Seventh Realm, and she is going to give herself permission to finally embark on that relationship with the centaur tamer that she has had this latent flirtation with.
Such a powerful
story. That's a lot of subtext.
Yes, the one that always sticks with me is the one that went...
Ugh. Oh, that, and you know what? That short story got banned in over 72% of libraries in Foon.
Really?
Yes, it did. It did, but just because it dealt with an erotic frankness.
Yes, it's very frank.
It was very anti-war.
Yes, obviously.
People thought it promoted a pro-humanistic approach to life.
Well, I'll tell you what, even though it was banned, I feel like I always hear people reading it, because sometimes if I'm at the Vermilion Minotaur, I'll walk by one of the doors where people are sitting,
yes.
And I just hear over and over like, So I'm like, people are reading it a lot to their kids or to... What's wrong with you?
Look for it in your local library.
You know, the shortest short story that I know of on Earth, the most famous short story that tells the whole story, and I believe it's Ernest Hemingway.
Oh, we're finally going to hear some
Earth
stuff.
Yeah, this is some Earth stuff. Earth stuff.
So glad I'm here.
I was about to ask.
I believe the short story goes is, baby shoes for sale, never worn.
Wow, so this has been worth the wait.
Oh,
great.
I love that, Arnold. That has expanded my concept of literature, because it's about a baby whose feet are so big that some thoughtless person has given them two small baby shoes, and the parents are like, no, thank you. We can't fit these doll shoes on our baby.
Wait, can you say the story again?
Well, okay.
So, just say it one more time.
Okay, this is Ernest Hemingway's story.
Just say it.
Yeah, yeah. Baby shoes for sale, never worn.
Great, so the baby died.
Yeah.
That's
the subtext of the story.
I disagree, Chunt. I think there that the baby just had a really baby large... Death. You know how sometimes you have to go to a baby shower here in Foon, and you're like, oh, I'm going to get them a lizard slip. And then you realize the baby doesn't have a lizard tongue, and you feel terrible that you showed up to the shower with a completely inappropriate gift.
I believe the interpretation of the story goes like this. The shoes were gifted to a family. And then the shoes tried to devour the baby, for they were imbued with a dark magic. And before they ever put the shoes on the baby's feet, they put them up on Smeg's list.
That happened to a cousin of mine. She had a baby, and someone gave her the baby-devouring shoes. And good thing she checked the tags, or else those shoes would have eaten the baby.
Yes, I mean, it's a wonderful gift if you want your baby to be devoured.
Yes, and some people do, and there's no judgment.
There should be a little bit of judgment, right? If you want your baby to be devoured, there should be some judgment for that. Like, I'm very open-minded. But that seems a step too far. I'm going to take a stand on that one.
I'll have to reflect on that.
If your baby... No baby is evil.
On Earth. So let's get into some Earth stuff.
No baby is evil.
On Earth, there's no evil babies.
There are no evil babies on Earth.
Can I ask you a question, Arnold? And as a father, as someone who's accepted gifts for your baby, what are gifts that you like to receive and what are gifts that you don't like to receive?
Oh, you know, that's a good question. I love to receive clothes for the baby. But usually, the thing I've noticed is that people will give you a lot of clothes for the size that the baby is now. It's much better to get clothes for a little further on.
Yes, like a business suit for when the baby is interviewing for positions.
Yeah, no, not that.
Or like a underwater breathing apparatus for when the baby goes scuba diving?
No, I'm just thinking like, you know, 6 months forward where suddenly you're not getting as many gifts.
So a Ribaldo.
Yes, so your baby's back of the head is protected.
So has this been a problem for you for the last 8 months?
Well, no. I mean, I haven't been able to see my daughter because I'm trapped in an alternate reality. Yeah.
And that is not your fault.
That is not my fault. Thank you, Benedict. Well, do you guys have any questions?
Yeah,
questions
a ton
about
of
Earth?
Questions.
Yeah, okay.
Many questions.
Let them.
What is on Earth before you got here? What was like a typical day on Earth?
Well, usually I have to get up in the middle of the night and feed the baby because at the time.
Okay, walk me through your day on Earth from the moment you wake up until the minute you arrived in.
Okay, from that day.
Yeah, that day.
Oh boy! All right, so I got up. I fed the baby.
And do you have the aquarium of saltines ready at the baby's crib to feed her?
The aquarium of saltines.
Yeah, what do you feed your baby? Yeah.
We feed baby either...
We feed baby?
We feed the baby either breast milk.
From a goat?
No, from my wife, actually.
Okay, interesting.
Either directly she feeds the baby, or we have a sort of pumping apparatus that will remove the breast milk and so that you can use it later if the woman isn't available.
You said that so clinically.
Well, no, yeah, I mean, it's...
You can just say if the mom's on it. If the woman is not available, it sounds so clinical.
I guess I was trying to universalize...
Sounds so sterile.
I guess I'm trying to universalize my experience so you guys can understand all Earth stuff, not just my Earth stuff.
That's wonderful, because I'm not a father, so I would not understand that. I'm just shocked that you don't have an aquarium full of saltines for the baby.
No. We feed... Oh, or sometimes you feed, like, a mixture. It's, like, fake milk, I guess. It's called formula. It's just like powder that you mix with
like
water.
Like equations?
No, it's not like a math thing.
Yeah, so the baby can be smart.
Okay, I'll just say yes.
Sometimes, my cousin, she whispers mathematical formulas into her infant's ear, and now that baby is discovering planets.
Wow. I actually have gotten a lot of emails about space for some reason. People really want to know about what your guys' concept of space is in Foon. And I kind of just assumed...
I don't want to talk about food and stuff.
Okay, fair enough. All right, this is our episode.
So you fed the baby.
I fed the baby. Then usually I'll see if the baby can be put back down for a nap. I will brush my teeth.
In Foon, you wouldn't say put the baby back down.
Because it sounds ominous?
Yeah.
Well, that's true. There's a lot of...
And then you take a nap?
No, the baby takes a nap. And then
for like three seasons?
for 3 seasons.
How long do Earth babies sleep for?
Oh gosh, not very long. Like in a couple, like an hour at the most, it feels like, at that time.
That's why there's so much child death.
Because the babies sleep for 3 seasons?
Yeah, they just sleep through everything.
And then you have to catch them up on what's happened. And you have to be, oh, no one's not really doing that anymore. That was kind of a winter thing. And now we're in summer and the babies are so confused.
And then you just get them a pair of shoes that devour something. And you're like, I'm done with this.
I've gathered some bits of Earth knowledge from my 20 adventures. I want to know, what does an Elon Musk smell like?
What does an Elon Musk smell like?
Yes, what's an Elon Musk?
You know, I gotta be honest.
What makes a Musk Elon?
I think that's a person. I'm not 100% sure I know who that is. I don't understand all Earth things. Like, you guys probably don't know everything about food.
Yes, I do.
Well, I have, just for my time on Twitter, my hour per day allotted on your computer, I have a 2-part question. What is a Hamilton, and how do I get tickets to it?
Okay, Hamilton. I'm trying to think. From the time that I was on Earth, all I really know about Hamilton is I know that there was a president named Hamilton.
Okay.
I don't know. Have you picked up more?
I just know that
It's also possible that there wasn't a president named Hamilton. There's some kind of historical figure.
Mm-hmm. Like maybe a Secretary of Treasury?
What's that?
I don't know it very much about Earth, but maybe it wouldn't be a President Hamilton, but a Secretary of Treasury named...
Possibly.
This is the power of my imagination that helps me write those very short stories.
Well, that's a great... You know, I'm very curious. Like, this is one I don't know, but why not, if just using context clues, what do you guys think Hamilton might be?
Oh, boy, I don't know. Hamilton...
Uh-oh. He's going into his wizard stage.
Type of cookware.
Oh, okay.
You use next to the ocean.
Hamilton Beach?
Yes, exactly.
Like Hamilton.
So any other Earth... Or should I go...
Chanta, are you not going to answer what a Hamilton is?
I would think a Hamilton is a type of, like, duel. Like, maybe it's something wizards do, is like, you know... Take 10 paces and turn around and cast a spell.
You should shoot up if you do that.
Yeah, like
the honorable.
I'll meet you for a Hamilton. Sounds like something Isidore would scream at someone.
And Benedict, what do you think it is?
I think it's a way to liquefy a pig. You're like, this pork is too solid. Let's get a Hamilton.
Well done. Yeah.
That would be so handy.
Yes, because sometimes I want a pig, but I don't want to chew.
Exactly.
Oh, sure.
I just want to slip it through a straw.
Yeah. And just for those of you at home keeping score, we've asked Arnie 3 questions, and so far he's turned it on us, and we've had to answer what we think it is rather than him telling
Arnie,
us what it
Arnie,
is.
Arnie, I have a question.
Sure.
What is courtship like on Earth?
Oh, courtship. Well, you know, it's changed. It's evolved very quickly, like over even just my lifetime.
But like bacteria?
I guess so. So basically, you know, you see someone that you like and you...
Kidnap them?
You don't kidnap them.
Yes, yes.
No, I know that's something that wizards do a lot of in the courtship.
Oh, yes, we kidnap each other. We turn into pieces of furniture. We disappear. We reappear. Sometimes we immediately fly out of a room. Just fly out the window all of a sudden. You never know what you're going to get with a wizard.
Well, on Earth, you know, it's kind of complicated, but there's a lot of technology involved these days. There's a lot of, like sending a message. Like, we have little boxes that are called phone. Well, you've seen my phone, but
I love it.
Normally, I'd be able to talk into it, and I would be able to send a message to the person I was courting, and we would talk on the phone.
And so what kind of things would you talk about? And I know you're trying to universalize this for us, but for me it's so much more helpful if it's more personal. It speaks on the Arnold experience.
Well, you know what? I try to be a listener. I think that's the thing that a lot of men from my world don't do, is I try to listen and ask questions. In the same way that I interview you guys, you know, when I'm courting a woman, I ask her questions about her life.
I knew he was trying to get us in bed.
what she's interested in. and just listen, like get their story and sort of find out what they're all about.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would probably also talk probably too much about pop culture stuff. Like, I don't know if I've really explained what pop culture is. Like entertainment. Like I
guess, like Danlett.
Like Danlett, the play that Tom the Traveler was in. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
He was marvelous in that.
Oh, you've got to see it.
Oh, three nights in a row. He should get a tosser for that.
He's nominated.
To get back to human courtship, also, you know, you just sort of try to, like, without being too cheesy about it, you throw in subtle hints that you're sort of attracted to them.
Yes, let's hear these subtle hints.
What are some subtle hints? Or...
Oh, yeah. Can you start with subtle hints, and then can you move on to unsubtle hints?
Sure.
More oblique.
Subtle hints would be, you know... very subtle hints would just be like smiling at them a lot, but also ew, just saying like, you're great, like telling them they're great, or...
you are great! That doesn't seem that subtle.
Or, you know, that their eyes look nice.
Ah, pretty thing. Let me bare my teeth to you and compliment the color of your eyes. Yes, I can see why that would work.
Uh-huh. As I stare unwaveringly into your eyes, let me tell thee that I find them most becoming.
To be honest, guys, you know, I've been married for a long time. I've been dating the same person for a long time before that.
You used to be married.
I am
who
still
were you
married.
Dating before you were married?
I was dating my wife before we were married.
And why?
And then before her, I dated a few people before that.
Ah,
but.
Yes.
What's a Houdini?
What's a Houdini?
Yeah.
I don't know. A Houdini.
God, you don't know anything.
No.
Chunt, I think I've sussed it out.
What?
The reason Arnold has avoided talking about Earth stuff
he
knows nothing about Earth.
Okay, I do know Houdini. I just realized. I was thinking you were referencing a different Houdini.
Is there more than one Houdini on Earth?
Probably. But the most famous Houdini on Earth is a magician, which is sort of like
Peter Houdini. That's the one I keep seeing on Twitter.
Someone named Peter Houdini?
Yes, that's what you're talking about, right?
No. I'm talking about, you know, 100, I don't know exactly how long ago, there was a magician, which is like a wizard, but they don't really have power.
And
but
did President Hamilton say, you cannot do your magic, Peter Houdini?
Oh.
Yes. So Houdini was like a famous, the most famous magician. And he would also, he would do tricks and illusions, like he would try to escape from things. Like he put himself in a straitjacket and he'd
so
escape
like
from it.
Point?
Sort of like make out point.
Like finding yourself trapped in a crystal coffin, about to marry the man who wants to marry you, and then suddenly, with your great wizardess powers, replacing yourself with a plate of croissants.
Yes. Also, though, one of the most notable things about Houdini is that he was killed.
Oh.
Doing a trick.
Oh, no.
Yeah, he asked someone, he would always have someone punch him in the stomach, which I guess was an impressive...
Is that a trick on Earth?
Is that a sexual thing?
Should we do it here today?
Yeah.
No, because Houdini died because of this. He would normally like flex his stomach muscles in a way, and then he got punched.
Oh, he had stomach muscles. Then we shouldn't punch on him.
Yes, never mind.
No, I don't.
Can we get back to the courtship question?
Okay. Yeah, sorry, we got off track, though.
And you said that you've been dating Saramaher for a while, and I was just wondering, how did you and Saramaher meet? Were you both on a quest?
Oh, boy, this one is sort of tough to explain. No, we were working, actually. We met on the job.
Oh, in a coal mine?
No. It was a really weird job. Like, we were both, I guess, sort of
like
actors.
galley rowers in a ship?
No,
Your eyes connected.
We were doing something called, like, promotional work, where a business will pay you money to do weird, borderline embarrassing things to draw attention to their company. So we were paid. We had to paint our faces completely blue.
Ah, the color of seduction.
Oh, is blue the color of seduction in
Finn?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
That's why he's Usador the Blue.
You
better believe it.
That's why all the women fawn over Usador the Blue.
That's true. Yes, that's so true.
Interesting.
Except okay, so your faces are painted blue.
So our faces are painted blue, and we are supposed to walk around the city drawing attention to ourselves and pretending to talk into the phones, like I was telling you before about talking on phones. And it was called Talk to Your Blue in the Face to promote how great these phones were. And, you know, we just got to talking to
talk
each other.
Talk until you are so aroused with sexual prowess that you merely explode.
Talk until your face is engorged with blood.
Yes, exactly.
I don't know much about advertising on Earth, but that sounds dumb as hell.
I mean, it didn't seem like the wisest promotional.
And so now does everybody on Earth use those phones because you did such a marvelous job of promoting them?
Well, everyone on Earth does use phones,
but
more
like the
or
phones
less.
That you were talking about all those years ago.
I have no idea how successful our promotion was.
Oh, so
but
you
I think
failed.
Not very. We succeeded in falling in love.
Was that
and
goal?
That's what they hired you for?
That was not what they hired.
That's more. I think that's wonderful. I think too often employers hire people and say, "I want you to do a job. I want you to file these papers. I want you to kill this dragon. Here's a task." And you, Arnold, you turned it around and you said, "How can this employment opportunity benefit me personally in the love department?" And good for you.
I mean, if you. Just taking out the love part of it, that's kind of how work is on Earth. Like, people are sort of like, what can I do within the confines of this job that will serve me? And you actually often get very resentful when your employer tries to impose actual work into your workday.
And once you realize you were falling in love with Sarah Maher, did you...
Sarah Maher.
What sort of magical trap did you set for her?
What kind of magical trap? I don't know. I mean, I think just my sparkling personality.
Try again.
One of the interesting things about romance on Earth is that sometimes courtship is not as direct. It's rarely sort of like asking someone out. It's more kind of like being friends and then kind of like sidling into a relationship.
So having a secret desire to trick them into dating?
I mean, that's a really crass way of saying it, but it's more sort of like... it's a safer position, you know? You're not as vulnerable if you're just sort of trying to be friends.
You're not stating what you really want. And
which
so you're
really,
indirectly
really
going... Yes, yeah. I see. What. And so you and Sarah Maher, on your first date, what did you do?
Well, I guess on our first official date, weirdly enough, we went to a theater in Chicago called the Davis Theater, which is a really terrible movie theater. It's sort of like seeing...
I see you're trying to get sponsorship for the podcast right now. Wonderful.
And we actually saw the movie The Chronicles of Narnia, which is a movie kind of about a world sort of like Foon.
Oh!
Where sort of magical things happen, and there was...
What sort of magical things happen in this story,
Kelly? Oh, boy, it's hard to remember. It's been quite a while. There was like a white witch, and she was taking over the land, and they had to get help from...
Oh, like Portabila the Magnificent?
Like who?
Like Portabila the Magnificent. Hundreds of years ago, she was the ivory sorceress, and she tried to take over the land of Foon, and then a ragtag group of orphans who had... secreted themselves into through a magical portal.
They secreted themselves?
Yes, they'd entered a chifarobe in their dimension, and then they went through the other dimension, and then they met, I believe it was Piccadillo the Hoofed, and he gave one of them Turkish fun time. And then they defeated Portabila the Magnificent.
Wow.
Yes, yes. It's in the history books.
Huh. Well, you've tricked us into talking about a fantastical world
sorry.
Instead of answering Earth questions.
But
once
yes,
again.
Sarah was really excited to see this movie that I was a little less interested in seeing. But as a gentleman, I agreed to go and see the movie that she wanted to see at one of the cheaper movie theaters in town. And we had a nice time, and we went and had a few drinks afterwards, and that was our first date.
Well,
that is going to get me through the cold nights of winter. Thank you for that tale of subtle eroticism.
How did you ask Sarah to marry you?
Well, we had been living together for a while, and we...
For a decade?
No, but for several years.
And was the baby born at this point?
No. This was before the baby was born.
All right.
And oddly, this also, you know, dating involves seeing a lot of movies or kind of like, sort of like plays.
Why wouldn't you spend time talking to each other?
Because it's just easier to go see movies. But we really loved this movie called It's a Wonderful Life, Which is a very old movie.
What is it about?
Okay.
Tell us the plot.
Okay. Gosh.
I love stories
now
so
I'm
much.
Remembering why I always just don't want to talk about Earth stuff. So It's a Wonderful Life is about a man named George Bailey, who is the nicest, greatest guy in town.
Oh, wonderful.
He's the one that has the most potential, and it's like he's going to leave town and do great things.
Oh, I love this.
But sort of life kind of conspires against him to a certain extent, and he just keeps having to stay in town because he's so good-hearted. And he helps
like
people out. And he builds up like a bank, and he does so much for so many people in the town.
Very true.
But he always feels
that
like he never got to attain his potential. And then he loses a bunch of money. He loses everybody's money in
what?
The town.
Oh, no.
And
I thought you said he was a good guy.
He is a good guy. Well, it's
then
not really
his fault.
Why did
he lose everyone's money?
Well, it's like his brother or his uncle or something loses all the money in the town, and he's really, like, stricken. He doesn't know what to do. And
so he
has,
decides, I'm going to make it better, and I'll get everybody's money back. The end.
No, unfortunately, this is where it takes a surprisingly dark turn. He decides to commit suicide.
That's not a wonderful life.
It is not a wonderful life.
Ironic title.
It is, and so he's about to commit suicide, but an angel appears.
Why do all the movies on Earth involve fantastical things that are here in film? You say Earth doesn't have... It seems like all the movies on Earth that you've talked about seem to have magic, whether it be a kid in a box in a closet, or angels,
maybe
or witches.
I'm the angel in the story and not George Bailey. Continue your story!
Well, there's a lot of escapism on Earth. Like, we consider our own world boring. So this angel shows him what his life would have been like if he had never been born. And it's a horrible nightmare scenario. Like, it's the same town, but everyone's lives are terrible and everyone's meaner. And he realizes that he's done a lot of good with his life. And then he wakes up. It's Christmas. Did I mention it was Christmas? Which is a holiday we have. God, there's so much.
I'm following. Through contextual clues, I'm able to get a semblance of the story. Yes.
Well, anyway, he comes home and he's so happy and he kisses his children who he loves and realizes he would miss very much if he had never been born. And
wait, do you hear that?
What?
The hog's face bell is ringing.
Oh.
Yes.
And the town bell is ringing. Do you hear that?
Yeah, I do. And, you know, in the movie, they say that every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings.
You just tacked that on because I said bell.
No, that's really a part of the movie.
Well, every time a bell rings, a puppy dies.
Oh, no.
One of those invisible puppies.
So the movie concludes this marvelous story about a man hamstrung by circumstance, trapped in a place he desperately wants to get out of, saddled with a family and responsibility, and you turn to Saramaher. What do you say?
Well, we'd seen that movie and really loved it, and it was a nice time. And so then a year later, we were going to go see the movie, and I went down on one knee, which is what you do when
you're
you
propose.
Hurt? Oh. I was actually hurt, weirdly. I'd hurt my back. It's a really complicated story. I'd hurt my back at the time, and so
But fascinating.
But I was worried that when I went down on one knee, that I wouldn't be able to get back up. So, the night before, I'd practiced in my bathroom, like getting down on one knee to see that I could actually pull myself back up. Guys, see, this
Good
Earth
for
stuff
you.
Episode
I love
is
this.
Not as delightful as you thought it was going to be.
I think so many people just take for granted being able to get on one knee. And good for you, Arnold, for taking the time to say, I'm going to go privately into my bathroom and attempt to do something I might not be able to do. I love that. So where were you when you went down on this dangerous physical challenge?
And then what's a humidifier?
Thank you so much for coming back, Benedict, and sharing Earth Stuff episode with us.
Thank you for having me. In this period of transition for me, it was just wonderful to be with such a good support system. Thank you, Chunt.
Didn't we just ask questions that he just ignored?
Well, no, I didn't ignore. I really tried to answer them.
You deflected a lot of them.
I did. I guess I did deflect a lot. But it really makes me appreciate how much food stuff you guys share with me every time. And I'm realizing that some of the questions I ask are not that easy to answer.
Not as easy as it looks, is it, Arnold?
And I'm sorry I didn't get through the whole story of my engagement and marriage.
It's fine.
To
I feel
wife.
Like a lot of it was probably fake. Like, Arnie Niekamp got down on his knee. Like, it just seems like a real
It's all,
stretch.
No, you know what? It's all as fantastical as it seems. Every word is true.
I thought it was one of the most romantic stories I've ever heard.
Well, let's do some emails here. I got an email to chunt@gmail.com. That's chunt with six T's. This is from Gavin St. Hours.
Says, if Arnie ever does that Earth Stuff episode he keeps promising you and Usador, ask him about something called professional wrestling. It's one of our noblest sports here on Earth, and I'm curious if you have anything like it in Foon.
It's sort of like, it's just like slow fighting. It's theatrical fighting, where you just, people pretend to be characters, and they grapple with each other, they roll around, and they threaten each other beforehand. And everyone knows it's fake, but everyone pretends that it's real, which is not entertaining. Like, why would anyone want some piece of entertainment that you all know is fake, but everyone doing it pretends is real?
It does seem ridiculous, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it seems like a horrible idea.
Like,
if something is fake, just say it's fake. Don't pretend
yes,
that it's real.
Why mince words? What about, I think we should start what is it called?
Professional wrestling?
Professional wrestling. Oh, as if a profession... But you've taken your job to be wrestling. Weird. All right. I think we should get Karam the Barbarian to do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he'd be sure. Perfectly fitted for it.
Yeah. I'm sure he would. Yeah, you know, professional wrestling is one of those things in my world where it's like, it's looked down upon by a lot of people. But then a lot of people...
Name them. Who looks down on that?
Well...
Shame on them.
Billy Yum Yum 2x2?
I mean, there are numerous Billy Yum Yum 2x2s probably do look down on it. But then a lot of people just love it so passionately. And sometimes people enjoy it ironically. And then people, like, loved it as a kid. So they, you know, decide to keep loving it into adulthood.
Who is your favorite professional wrestler?
When I was a kid, my favorite professional wrestler was Hulk Hogan, and I don't know what's happened since I've come into this world, but I'm sure he's still an upstanding citizen who everyone loves.
Did you get any emails, Arnie?
I did, yeah. Let's real quick take a look. How many ranks of royalty are there in Foon?
Four.
Okay.
Well, that's all the time we
thanks so much. I love hearing about the Magic Tavern. Oh, also, did you know at the end of your podcast, a ghostly voice says how it isn't true? Maybe that's why it's so hard to get people to listen. Is that the work of the Dark Lord? Just wondering. I'm a believer. Nika Harper. That name sounds familiar.
Wait, is it hard to get people to listen to this?
I don't know. I don't know how many people are listening to this podcast. I'm guessing a lot of people. I'm hoping a lot of people are listening.
Is your father coming and recording more stuff after we finish our episodes?
Did they say ghostly or hunger ghostly?
Just ghostly. No. I don't know. It's probably some confusion. I don't know. It's probably maybe like they're listening to it on iTunes and then like the next podcast and their playlist comes up. I don't know. A couple people have said something about some weird thing playing at the end of our podcast. I'm sure it's just some weird technical glitch. So before we go, Benedict, what does the future hold for you?
Well, level 2 eunuch classes start in October, and so I'm going to be going to those, and then, you know, just trying to get my face seen around the cast. It's so political, the eunuch world, and you just really need to know the right people and be at the right eunuch parties and know the right eunuchs. And so I'm just going to be hobnobbing with the genitalists in the near future. And of course, as always, writing my short stories.
You know, it's already October, so you might have missed the sign up period for level 2.
Oh no.
I know I've been doing a lot of trying to convince you that this wasn't real, and I'm going to do more of the same right now. Think about it. It has to be a podcast. In any other world, this many wordy conversations would have led to some sort of plot development. Usador the Blue was played by poor man's Ian McKellen, Matt Young. That's not even accurate. It's more like the man a poor man's Ian McKellen would feel sorry for. Chunt the whatever he is was played by poor man's lumberjack doing voiceover gigs for free, Adil Rathai. The eunuch Benedict Whisperbrew was played by special guest Brendan Dowling. Brendan and Matt perform regularly with the Improvised Shakespeare Company. You can also follow Brendan on Twitter, at Brendan Dooling. And if you're looking for pithy observations about the Sally Field film canon, today is your lucky day. Hello from the Magic Tavern is produced by Ryan DeGiorgi, Evan Jacover, and Arnie Niekamp. This episode was edited by Chris Rathjen. Check out Chris's other podcast, Improvise Star Trek. Goodness, the Peter Pan syndrome's in full swing today. Every last thread of this carefully woven quilt of blather was brought to you by Cards Against Humanity, with help from the Chicago Podcast Co-op. Check out Cards Against Humanity at cardsagainsthumanity.com and the Chicago Podcast Co-op at chicagopodcastcoop.com. Basically, just type in names and put .com at the end of them.